Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and the Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Well, hey.
How is everybody?
We're doing okay. Fantastic.
Right, yay. Yeah. Well, it's coming up on Emerald City Comic Con time. Mm-hmm. It's that time of year. Do we have anything we want to say about ECCC?
We have a lot of stuff going on for this ECCCCCC.
EC3.
This is our coming out as a nonprofit organization, Emerald City Comic Con, and we will be accepting donations at the convention, and donations of $5 and more get a lapel, I believe. And we will also have a, we won't have the actual variant cover to it, but we have a cat cosplay cover for exclusive cat cosplay cover for Exo Manowar number one.
From Valiant.
I love the cat covers.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we'll have the prints up, prints available at the convention, and the photographer and one of the cats signing copies at our booth at some point.
Will the cat be signing? Do you put its paw in?
Well, Nathan made a stamp out of her paw to use to do the signing. So it is authentically her paw, but it is a mold. So, you know.
Exo Cat Award.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Limited edition covers.
And you can get the cover, the official issue, I think, at the end of March.
Yep.
I believe it's the last week in March.
So we got that going on, and trying to think if we had anything else unique.
Is there anything happening inside the store while ECC is happening?
We will be doing a special sale. I always kind of do the last year, I just kind of pinged at the sky. I was just like, can I just do stuff and see if it works? So it's the Letting Chris Run Rampant sale.
All right.
And I tend to have a lot of good deals for those people who cannot make it to the convention.
Now, these good deals, like, are these good deals like, bwah, ha, ha, ha?
Both.
Good deals. Okay,
yeah.
Excellent. I'll be there.
Yes. Yeah. I will be selecting a huge stock of trade paperbacks from the store that will be 50% off. Wow. And all of our comic sets where we put together entire runs will be 50% off.
Chris, is it okay? Can I just like start making my stack now? Is that all right?
No.
It's not fair. Yeah.
First come, first serve.
We've been friends for so long.
And for those who do come into the store and or, you know, listen to the podcast who live in Seattle, we did have an end of year sale where we did a bunch of deals on the deals. And we have actually refreshed our sets since then. So if you think you've seen it all, you have not.
No.
Yep. Yes.
All right.
Refresh it.
I believe Scott was also hinting that there will be an artist who will be, this will be their first Emerald City Comic Con, and we will be debuting a print of theirs at our booth as well. More details on that in the future.
Cool.
Yes.
So yeah.
All right. Like Comics Dungeon on Facebook for those details. Mm-hmm. All right. And piggybacking on all of that, is there anything new in store right now that if people don't want to wait for a comic extension, they should come to the store and be like, and you will say, you need to pick up this?
The new Rick Remender series, 7 to Eternity, Volume 1, just came out. That's another one of his sci-fi alien sagas.
We wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but it is really, really popular.
It's very popular.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a great artist attached to it.
Yes, there's a very,
I'm a little
very
burnt out on
good.
Rick Remender personally, but
I would actually go and read Black Science and catch up to that over 7 to Eternity. But anyway.
Okay.
The new Batwoman Rebirth just rolled out. That was coming out of the Detective Comics. So this is her after the Monster Men stuff. I did a review on that stuff a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited for that. The new Super Sons, which I've also talked about how much I love, that's the stuff between Damian and John. That just rolled out, and it is fantastic. And there's a really cool Dustin Wynn cover. If you love the Dustin, as you should.
Mm-hmm. We did just get the new Alien toys, which are really cool, because for those that remember in the 90s, there was a wave of Alien toys where after the dog Alien and Alien 3, they're like, how many other animals and how would that make the aliens different. So there's a gorilla alien, a rhino alien. There was a snake alien. So the NECA, it's NECA, right?
That's how I pronounce it.
I think it's NECA.
I don't know if that's correct.
They're bringing them back, but with nice new sculpts. So there's a mantis and there's a gorilla.
So tune in 2 weeks from now when we have our discussion about aliens, because we'll be talking more about these critters because they're in my quiz time.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks, y'all.
It's like, it's kind of like Chris. Ixnay, Ixnay.
Don't go too deep, man.
Yeah, don't go too deep.
Cut that off at the pass.
Yeah.
Hey, so what's new in comics and movies? Well, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is going to come to a theater near you on May 5th. I heard an interesting tidbit about this movie. It's reportedly the only movie that has a score of 100% from test audiences, meaning the way it works in Hollywood is they show films to test audiences, and these chuckleheads get to decide what does and does not work in the movie, and the studio goes back and assume these are regular ticket-buying Americans and changes the film. Well, nobody wanted to make any changes on this one. Did y'all see the trailer for this?
I've seen like the 17 trailers of it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I only saw one.
Kind of over.
All I really is Rocket with the nuclear bomb thing and then screaming Baby Groot, which was just, okay, I'm sold. I'll be there.
Yeah. Everybody's sold on the Baby Groot, I think. That, like, okay. I mean, I think you can maybe take it or leave it, but like,
no.
He's a little guy.
He's pretty cute.
Screaming Baby Groot. Well, but Yondu's in it. So they're like, some of the characters from old school Guardians are
right.
And Mantis.
Yeah.
Which
Mantis
just tickles
is really
me
cool.
Because, Chris, how far back does Mantis go in Avengers? She goes back to the 70s, right? Yeah. And she was this weird, loopy kind of spiritual, like for
yes,
she was
big
for, but for a while she was a bug person, would and then she was a tree person.
Ethereal
and then,
Madonna, is that
something like that?
Something
She's related to the celestial
one of the
Madonna.
Few,
that's what I was thinking of.
And she was like one of the few Vietnamese superhero characters ever introduced into the Marvel canon. You know, I'm sure that's not. I was looking at her like wiki page a couple months ago, and I'm like, this character has been through more reboots and revamps and retreads.
Well, and she was included in the Abnett and Lanning run of Guardians, which is the only reason there is a Guardians movie, because that resurrection of the Guardians during like the Annihilation arc of the Marvel cosmic stuff is what birthed the movies. So it's like, hey, you're going back to the really good stuff. That's nice.
But I have a nostalgic fondness for the stuff from the 70s. Mind you, I haven't read it. It's probably terrible, but I remember reading it as a kid and you know, that all the characters represented the colonies of the nine planets in our solar system and, you know, I love them. They were marvelous. But yeah, none of those characters, save Yondu, are in the current continuity.
Right. Yep.
I think also, I don't think they saw in the trailer, but I know the toys they've shown him, the Ego, the Living Planet. But it's,
oh, yeah?
It's, what's his name? The actor who was in Big Trouble in Little China.
Kurt Russell.
Is Ego, the Living Planet.
Oh my goodness!
I blacked out on this name. Sorry. Oh,
that's all right. Just give us clues. We'll catch you. We'll form a net with our fingers.
Yes.
But he's humanoid, or maybe
he's
projection
not a big,
of him.
He's not a big, spongy planetoid head thinger.
Yeah.
Oh, with
maybe
roots.
He will be later on.
Oh, yeah. We can hope, can't we?
We can hope.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So that's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I have to admit, I have not actually seen the first one.
Oh, dude, are you serious?
I am
serious. It's fine. You don't need to do anything. You just need to go see the movie.
Right.
May 5th.
On May 5th. Excellent.
Okay. No, the Guardians of the Galaxy movie was the best Star Wars movie that George Lucas couldn't make.
Mm.
You know? And before we got The Force Awakens, Guardians of the Galaxy was like, yeah, that's a great Star Wars
movie. It was, that's a great Star Wars movie. That was a great noise. Can we make like a button for that?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, we'll just poke Cole and have him make that noise.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Wahey. It's the reversing wahey.
Yeah.
It's the wahey, but like backwards.
I just am all full of gastric Hiawahe.
Hiawahe.
Hiawahe. Oh my god.
Now you're speaking some,
all right,
some
well,
dialect.
Speaking of things that I haven't seen.
What have you not seen, Ben Lawrence?
Well, okay, I have not seen Luke Cage yet, but Iron Fist is coming out. Don't give me that look, Cole
really?
Hornaday.
I thought you'd done your homework,
no,
son.
No, I haven't done my homework. Oh. So I have
it
seen.
Right here.
I know, I what? Have. Well, it did right. say that
you
I
know,
watched
I just,
it.
I just skim his show notes because it's a Ben.
So here's the thing. So Netflix does a really great job of producing TV shows.
Yes.
I've enjoyed both seasons of Daredevil and Jessica Jones. I haven't watched Luke Cage, but people tell me that it's really great. Iron Fist is coming out, and it's getting to that point where there's just so much.
Yeah.
It's almost too much. Sell me on Iron Fist. Why should I care about that character?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. This is what I'm looking forward to, and it's always, it's, you know, it's, you're going to, no, anyway. Misty Knight was in Luke Cage, and there's some amazing things that happen there, and some little, like, Easter egg-y kind of things that happen that are really exciting. And then Colleen Wing is going to be in Iron Fist, and they are the
Daughters of the Dragon.
Yeah, Daughters of the Dragon. Okay. So it's like their friendship and their partnership is really exciting. And then Danny Rand and Luke Cage becoming friends could be potentially very exciting. Yeah. So pretty much I'm looking forward to the friendship aspect of these Marvel things.
Okay.
And hopefully, and some more, there's going to be some more Night Nurse because she's in everything apparently. Right. But I like her. She's got a good head on her shoulders.
The Danny Rand character, you know, he leaves a little bit to be desired because he borrows from so many different themes we've seen before. You know, the wealthy child, you know, the millionaire, lost son, returning home. Where have we seen that before? Green Arrow, you know, Batman. So we have a millionaire playboy.
Yes.
What's that?
He did his training in the mountains.
And Iron Fist did his training in the Himalayas.
And there's a little bit of, you know, white imperialism there where he goes to, he gets trained by the Asian mystics and comes back to the white man's world.
Doctor Strange.
There's a lot of them.
Almost like there's a formula.
But the thing is, the thing that dawned on me as I was watching Luke Cage, that did not when I was reading the Power Man Iron Fist comic book back in the 70s, is that Iron Fist and Luke Cage are both characters that really were spawned from the grindhouse movies in the 70s. You know, blaxploitation films, the kung fu pictures, these characters both represented urban fad of grindhouse films, and Marvel tried to cash in on that, and the books, their individual books, failed miserably. So what do? We put them together, and they kind of propped each other up for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of interesting that now they're finding new life at Netflix, and they're actually being, but I think it's one of these things where the generation of people who grew up reading those comic books and watching those movies are now telling those stories from their perspective and doing it in a better light. So I am really excited about Iron Fist. I'm just kind of concerned that might be the weak link in the chain.
Well, I think the Netflix shows have had a little bit of pacing problems. I think the Daredevil is the strongest of the bunch.
Sure.
Jessica Jones fell flat kind of in the center for me, and so did Luke Cage, but then it came back up again. It's just, I think they have a storyline and they're trying to stretch it out.
Right.
And that tends, you know, into 13 episodes, and that doesn't always need to be. Mm-hmm. So you get a little like, okay, same thing. Okay, let's move forward. Yeah. So I don't know how Iron Fist's story is going to be.
So what I'm hoping for is that there was a run of Iron Fist, by Matt Fraction, and he co-wrote it with
Immortalized?
Nicole's getting it.
Brubaker who did the Immortal?
Brubaker,
It's Brubaker. I read the Brubaker run.
Sorry, I'm yelling into the microphone because I'm yelling at Nicole.
The Brubaker stories.
Yeah,
I thought they're terrific.
So hopefully they might take some of that because they introduced the other fighting styles, the other warriors, and I really want Fat Cobra. I just really want him to have his own television series because Fat Cobra was like a really huge, large man who couldn't stop eating and whoring around, and he was like the deadliest weapon.
Like just Falstaff in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he's Falstaff. So it's just kind of like, if you can bring us all those guys, that'd be really cool, you know? Because a lot of like the older mythology, there's some really good high points, but they get a little boring after a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you can only do so much with the Steel Serpent and whatever.
And so far there's like evil corporate white guy.
Right.
Like Stez looking like to be the enemy. And that's like kind of like, well, yeah, so that's life anyway. Let's like get some more fantasy in it.
And but you know, it's a good opportunity for them to mix and match because they'll probably bring in the hand stuff and you know, kind of bring together the drug dealer woman that was working with the Kingpin in season one.
I can't remember.
They're definitely bringing her
in. Yeah, she's in the trailer. So I saw.
You remember the woman who was the head of?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's going to be playing a role in there
Chinese
too.
Chinese. Syndicate.
Yeah. So there might be some interesting little bits in there. I'm looking forward to really cool fighting. Like, you know, we got some really cool scenes in Daredevil.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to get some glowing fists. And I think that stuff is going to be really exciting. So I hope they're going to be able to pace it well.
The flaw with the flaw with Iron Fist for me, and it's something that has sort of dawned on me, is that white privilege protagonist. Bear with me a second. So I just watched the latest retread of Tarzan, The Legend of Tarzan, with, you know, lovely Mr. Skarsgård. And I was sitting there watching it, and how many times have we seen the Tarzan story, and they do and they revisit his origin, and then it dawned on me, I'm like, have there never been any native African children that were left abandoned in the woods, in the jungle? And why did not the apes ever raise these abandoned African children? Why are white people so darn special? Same thing with Iron Fist. You know, it's like his family crashes in the mountains, and it's like it's all about this white person, this white savior figure, this Moses in the bulrushes sort of figure. But have there never been any native Tibetan Asian children orphaned in the mountains and raised in the temple to be, you know?
Just guessing, if they have been left in the woods, they knew enough to find their way back home.
Oh, and the white people are too stupid.
Exactly.
So they get this opportunity to be gods. Yeah. Okay, all right, thanks for clarifying that for me, Ben.
Yeah, and I mean, the problem is, you know, we got so many white male superheroes for so long over decades that now that they're becoming TV shows, we're coming into an age of diversity and seeing different stories, and it's very exciting, and then we're like, oh, white guy.
And I felt kind of like, at 51, I'm sitting there going, oh, that is the problem with Tarzan.
The difference is somebody indigenous would be like, well, I know the safe way back home. But the white person is just like, look at that mountain. I have to conquer that mountain.
Exactly.
Give me the
dragon.
And
if you just turned around and went back, you would have found like a village or something, and you would have been fine.
I would have hunted that dragon.
Yeah.
White privilege does not protect you from tigers. All right, let's move on, friends.
Lesson of the day. You're welcome.
Speaking of Netflix, there's this thing that I heard about. I actually put it in the show notes and called it WTF is Comic Blitz. Comic Blitz is actually, they call themselves the Netflix of comics. I'm a bit suspicious of this because I think this has been tried before.
Yeah,
because that's what Marvel Unlimited is, but just for Marvel. So
but this is actually a crowdsourced service where you can pay $250. You can buy stake in Comic Blitz, unlimited access to a library of nearly 5,000 issues and 750 titles. I'm saying this kind of sarcastically because it doesn't sound like very much.
No.
From IDW, Valiant, Top Cow, and other indie publishers. And for like a certain amount, if you give them 25 grand, you get a 15-minute Skype call with Mark Wade and voting rights.
I could stalk Mark Wade for less than that, but
I'm looking at you differently right now. I need you to know that.
He said he has the time or care to.
Yeah. So $7.99 is like the monthly cost to the service, which is like, that's not a bad price, but it's like, it doesn't have Marvel, DC, or Core Image.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, that doesn't mean you're not getting good stuff, but it's a very limited Netflix.
So this is a digital...
Yeah,
it's digital,
scanned comic
yeah.
book service.
And it sounds very similar to that other one that I already forgot that stopped doing. Scribd.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing, but they couldn't get the Marvel DC and, you know, so...
Because Marvel and DC do their own subscription service, right? Yeah. Is that right?
Marvel does. DC, I think, is through Comixology.
Comixology. Okay.
But, and there's like another four or five that are still surviving beyond the Amazon Comixology, you know, monstrosity. I mean, it's interesting because they called it equity crowdfunding, And that is fascinating, and that we should keep an eye on that. But when I did take a look, there were only like 11 people that had signed up for that $250 thing. So, I mean, the thing about it is like, if they are successful, then you do make more money. But that's a big if, and they have to survive against Amazon.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know.
And I think Comixology already does a sort of unlimited monthly service, or at least they were trying that out. I think it was like 13 a month or something like that. So now they have to also compete with that. And while they have a lower price, they're not offering as many wares. Right. So it always affects you if you can't carry a little of everything.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to comic books.
Mm-hmm. As a retailer, do you have a little bit of schadenfreude when you see like a digital service just bite it?
Not really, because in the long run, digital turned out to be not the real threat for comics. It's Amazon that's the threat.
Yeah.
It's people being able to buy their trade paperbacks at like 50 or 60% off of retail.
And then
you have people coming to the store like, can you price match? I'm like, well, no, because then we're kind of giving it away to you.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like terribly moved by it when it happens, but I don't feel that kind of like, hey, they're dead.
I kind of feel for anyone who comes out and doesn't have an offering of everything, because I feel like they already have points against them.
Yeah.
So if anything, I feel a little empathy for them.
Right. Oh, well.
Yeah.
You're a better person than I, because I would totally be like, ha-ha, suck it.
It's not everywhere. My evil comes out in different ways, yes. So it's fine.
Selective evil.
Yeah, it's selective.
All right, cool. Well, and finally, friends, let's talk about Mr. Bill Finger. His birthday was on February 8th. He was born in 1914. So he would have been, let me do math, 103. So let's talk about Bill Finger. Now, we all know him as like the co-creator with Bob Kane.
Now we do.
Batman. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. Yeah. Now we do. And he's actually in the in, I think it's not Suicide Squad. It might be BVS, Batman v Superman.
They give him a slight credit.
They do give him a small credit.
Yeah.
And there was an article that you forwarded around earlier, which talked about how much of a jerk Bob Kane was, and that he is supposed to be listed as the sole creator of Batman
because of contractual stuff he did
in Eternity.
Yeah. He's you got to understand in that, you know, we're talking 1938, 1937, mm-hmm. and comic books were really, we're going to be a fly-by-night kind of industry. And it begs the question, was Bob Kane a shrewd business person?
Yes.
Or was he a fraud?
They set it up in this article.
In
this article that Chris sent out, they set it up in terms of like Bob Kane was like the Steve Jobs and Bill Finger was the Steve Wozniak.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Except it doesn't sound like, Steve Jobs was as big of a jerk. You know, Steve Jobs still respected and gave lots of credit to Woz.
It's entirely possible that Bob Kane actually did not have 1 ounce of talent in his body. Mm. I mean, there are lots of anecdotes about him tracing whenever he was handed a pen and a board to draw. He was tracing work from someone else. And also, Finger, to my understanding, his Finger was but one of maybe a handful of people that were in his studio. And they were, because remember, it's not just the floppies. There were the dailies and the Sundays, and they were cranking out Batman left and right. Same with Superman at that time.
Yeah, it was
too.
A lot of different people.
But later in life, it's that when the Batman star really started to rise. In popular culture in general, with the Adam West, Burt Ward TV series, that people started paying more attention to this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And in reading about Bob Kane, I started to see him more as having a severely narcissistic psychological affliction. In fact, there's something called the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Oh, that's what you're putting
that's
up.
That's why you wanted to look that up.
Yes, because when you start reading more about the more recent stuff about Kane, where he really believes his own story that he actually created, I mean, that he was like the whole genius behind Batman.
Well, did you see the part of that article I sent where his gravestone says God gave him Batman?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The co-creator of Batman is God, not Finger,
And isn't that convenient.
Yeah.
But if, in case you're not familiar, the Dunning-Kruger effect is this cognitive disorder where someone with a low ability actually suffers from this illusion of superiority. And I think that is Bob Kane in a nutshell right mm-hmm. there.
It's there's reflections of Stanley Kirby for me in all this, where there's just somebody who is really good at being a businessman, and they can have talent, they cannot have talent, it could go either way, but they create this persona, and they actually did do things that were important, but at the cost of somebody else.
Precisely.
And the credit for somebody else, because the thing is, Kane generally, you could give him credit for, like, there's going to be a vigilante who wears a costume and does stuff, but Robin, Commissioner Gordon, the Batmobile, the Batsignal, the Joker, everything that makes Batman Batman is his finger and other people.
His backstory, like his parents getting
the reason that we care.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Other than just guy. And there's a cartoonist that did a great like one page panel or a strip of and I think it's one of the guys that did the Batman animated series where it's like, what would have been like without Bill Finger? And there's just this really bland guy who just like drops off a criminal in like a random car at some police precinct, and he's like, well, I guess I'll just go home now, and that's like the end of the story. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, so yeah, Bill Finger, cool. Very important.
All right, so happy late birthday, Mr. Bill Finger. Do we have any final things to say about Mr. Bill before we move on to Bookport?
No.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's move on to Book Report then, everybody. And hey, Chris Casso, let's start with you.
So I'll review Beyond the Western Deep, which is published by Action Lab, the same publisher that does Princeless, and written by Alex Kane. Art by Rachel Bennett, who I really like. If you're a fan of Mouse Guard or...
Redwall,
thank you. Redwall, this is definitely up your alley. There's a lot of stuff like that coming out right now. There's Scoriers, and I say a lot of them, and that's the only one I can think of right now.
Well, Mice Templar came out a while ago.
Yeah. And so it's really well put together. It's a little tricky for me to follow because there's a opening exposition, and there's like seven races, and they're all like different breeds of canine, feline, and chipmunk, and other brown furry guys. And there's like this intricate race relations and wars. And within three or four pages, I was just like, I think I need a pen and a paper for this. And
did Alan Moore write it?
And it'd be way more depressing.
Did you find the annotated Western Deep?
Yeah. But it's an interesting story with good characters. Bennett's artwork is very fluid, very bright, and great facial expressions. And there's a mystery forming. So this is a series of graphic novels. It's also similar in, like, I would compare it a little bit to Usagi Yojimbo. It's all ages, and Usagi Yojimbo does that thing where it's feudal Japan, people are going to die, but he never shows you graphic murder. He always shows you like a skeleton coming out of their word balloon, and you know that's what happened, but it's not too graphic for younger readers. This one, any of the real violence happens a little bit off panel, but it's really well inferred, and you know what's going on. So yeah, if you're into kind of fantasy with anthropomorphic animals and good storytelling, I would recommend Beyond the Western Deep. Volume 1 is only $10, and it's a pretty deep read.
Cool. All right.
The art kind of reminds me of Disney's Robin Hood a little bit.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
It has that kind of tone to it, too. So, yep.
Awesome. Cool.
I like it.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Nicole, what about you?
So God Country number 2 came out in recent weeks, so I figured I would review God Country number 1. It flew off the shelves for some reason. Everybody was just wild about God Country.
Mm-hmm.
So it is written by Donnie Cates, and art is by Jeff Shaw, and color by Jason Wardy. And it's following a young man and his wife live with an old man with Alzheimer's, his father. And there's a really bad storm, a tornado, and somehow the The father gets a hold of a magical god sword that makes him well, and it becomes a story of good and evil, like a demon and a god who misses his sword. Like at the end, you see some god guy who's like, "I'm gonna get my sword back." And so it was kind of interesting, and I'll be curious to see how issue two reads. The art is kind of unique. It's got kind of a similar tone to some stuff that Image has been putting out, so it really does fit in their wheelhouse. But at times, the art didn't do too much for me. It gets very, very scratchy and rough. And what were you going to say? Kind of what?
It kind of reminds me of Sean Murphy.
A little bit of Sean Murphy, but I like Sean colors. Murphy better. Wardy does a good job on colors. I think that as a team, they were able to tell the narrative really well. I think that it was laid out pretty well. But I don't know that the first issue gave me enough to go on, although I think that's just me, like a bias, because I'm kind of like old man Alzheimer's and then a god sword. Like, I think maybe for a certain person out there, they'd be like, this is amazing, you know? So... it must have been everyone else's jam because it flew off the shelf. And actually, right now I'm looking at a copy as the second printing because I think we sold out of the first issue. So it's kind of interesting. You know what? There's the first opening scene. It kind of reminds me of Pretty Deadly. Emma Rios's Pretty Deadly because there's bunnies in fields and that's a whole thing. So God Country, it was okay. But if that sounds like your jam, you should definitely check it out.
Alrighty. Yeah. Cool. God Country. Thanks, Nicole. And Cole Hornaday, what about you, sir?
Well, I picked up the first two issues of Dark Horse's new limited series by Richard Corbin called Shadows on the Grave. I think it's going to run 8 issues. And it's Corbin going back to his EC-inspired horror anthology roots. And this is the stuff that I like best from Corbin. In case you're not familiar, Richard Corbin was kind of like the epitome of Bay Area, last gasp, kitchen sink, underground comics in the 70s. You could only, I remember only being able to buy some of it at head shops. His stories, his characters, his design work is really unique. People look like they're made from clay and rags. And there's this strange eroticism to his work that has always compelled and repelled me at the same time.
They're all really squishy.
Yeah, they're squishy. Like I said, they look like they're made of clay. Most living creatures look like they're rotting underneath. Just look at the way the elongation of the forms and stuff. But Corbin has always fascinated me because I can always depend on all those creepy factors. Plus, in this series, you know, he sticks with the tradition of having the host. In this case, it's Mag the Hag and Gurgi, which is, you know, reminiscent of like EC's the Crypt Keeper and the Old Witch. And then in DC Comics, we had Cain and Abel, the House of Mystery and House of Secrets. And, you know, so I love this kind of stuff. What I'm not certain of is if this is all new original material. I'm thinking that it's some original material or new material, rather, interspersed with stuff that may be older, because Corbin, since he owns all of his work, he holds on to the rights to all of his work, he reprints it a lot, either you know, through his own publishing company or through somebody else. Because in this, I think it's the second issue, we have this lovely acrylic and ink work that he does. By the way, this is all black and white tones, but then there'll be just an ink illustration which looks older. The stories vary. They're all over the place. The covers are beautiful. I will stick with this because it's Corbin. But Corbin is an acquired taste. And if you're a horror freak and a freak for, well, if you're just a freak.
And Ben Lawrence took one, by the way.
Your freak friend. I want to look at it.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that part where you're like, I don't know if these are new or old, but because I was just looking at an old heavy metal magazine I had that was like a Corbin special. And I'm like, is this new for this time, or is this some of this new for this time and some of it old from other times?
No, what else is that his style has not changed in 40 years or more.
Mm-mm.
I mean, the work...
people are more bulbous, some are less bulbous.
Yeah.
And some of it looks like Mad Magazine from like 30 years ago.
Well, he's very influenced by those the old EC style. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to tell, but I think you know that there are a couple of consistent things in the universe of in the reality of horror comic books, and that is one is Richard Corbin's stuff is always going to look the same. It's okay.
Either you or another customer was just wait, I don't know if I read the Cyclops story before, and I'm just like, I think he's probably done the Cyclops story more than once, and he's counting on us not knowing if he's done it.
But I checked in the on the opening. What do you call it? The
small print.
Yeah, that stuff. And it does not give credit to anything else, but I got to go dig up my old Corbin comics because I swear I've read some of these before.
You got to find out the truth.
I got to get to the truth.
All right. Cool. Shadows of the Grave by Richard Corbin. Thanks, Cole. Mm-hmm. And that is Book Report, and that is our show. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com and Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Find us online at perfectboundpodcast.com, where you can subscribe to us via iTunes or any way you get your podcasts, or send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Do you have something you want one of our illustrious panel here to review? Send it in, and I will hoist it upon them. All right. Now, get your quiz hats on, everybody. It's quiz time, and this week our questions come to us from Mr. Chris Gasso. Lay it on us, Chris.
So our co-worker Leanne lent me a anime series called Code Geass. Geass. And it's an alternate history story, and it's really well done. I recommend it. It's like a two-season set. I'm through season one. So this entire quiz time is based on alternate histories. So number one, this Avatar series written by the wicked and divine Kieran Gillen follows an alternate World War II timeline where Germany was the first nation to produce a superhuman. It roughly follows various real history events and engagements, but slowly alters them as the Germans gain the upper hand in every battle. What is this called?
Is it Uber?
Yes, it's Uber.
All right.
Really good series.
I know a thing.
Next, this multiversal tale enjoyed two limited series written and illustrated by Brian Talbot and focused on the timeline where England has emerged from its artificially prolonged civil war to become the predominant world power under the autocratic rule of its psychic Queen Anne. What is this? What is the name of either series or both?
Well, was it Luther Arkwright?
Mm-hmm. The Adventures of Luther Arkwright.
And I don't remember what the second series was.
Heart of the Empire.
Heart of the Empire.
Yep.
That's right.
Even I knew the Luther Arkwright one.
As we talk about in the Octobriana episode of Panel Jumper.
The interesting thing is the vast majority of alternate history stories tend to either break around World War II or during the British Empire, you know, gaining or losing a foothold. Next question. This alternate history tale by Warren Ellis and Chris Weston changes the timeline where soldiers and operatives of the United Kingdom reached the German rocket installations at Peenemünde, ahead of the U.S. Army and the Soviets, and brought all of the key personnel and technology to Britain in a mirror of the real world's Operation Paperclip. Thus is created... Oh, I just... Go ahead.
You know, the Ministry of Space.
Operation. Yes.
The Ministry of Space.
I was like, thus is created the Ministry of Space, whose mission is to develop. What is the name of this three-issue series?
Oh, that
was
sad.
I was tired when I made this one.
Okay. So, was it Chris Epting that drew that?
Chris Weston.
Weston. I love his artwork.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It took 3 years for three issues to be published.
Yeah, that was miserable.
Warren Ellis.
I hate it when that happens.
It's well worth reading, but we forgot it ever existed.
Yep. This series by Arvid Nelson is a quest for the Holy Grail told as a murder mystery. It is set in the year 1933 in an alternate history Europe where magic is real, feudalism persisted, and the Protestant Reformation was crushed by a still politically powerful Catholic Church. What is it called?
Rex. Was that Rex Mundi?
That is.
That I'm shaking my head because that series had such incredible potential.
Mm.
And just augered into the ground so slowly.
I even had a t-shirt. I had a Rex Mundi t-shirt.
You bought in.
Yeah. I did.
Final one.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
I'm taking away from, I'm going back to superheroes here. This superhero alternate history follows a timeline where farmers Jonathan and Martha Kent experience a flat tire on their truck caused by a nail, which results in them missing the arrival of a Kryptonian spaceship and discovering the baby Kal-El. What results is a silver age where superhumans are feared, and journalist Perry White conducts an anti-metahuman campaign along with the mayor of Metropolis, Lex Luthor, deputy mayor Jimmy Olsen, and former hero Oliver Queen. What is this called?
The Nail.
Yep. By Alan Davis, it's all based on the one little poem goes, for want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the knight was lost. For want of a knight, the battle was lost. So it was a kingdom was lost, all for want of a nail.
And there was more than one.
Yeah, another series. Nail.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's right. Not the
seriously,
most creative
another
title.
Nail?
Called Another Nail.
But wow.
I bought it for Alan Davis's artwork because I used to think Alan Davis was the bomb.
Well, Another Nail was worth it just because it opens with a war between Darkseid and Apocalypse versus the Green Lantern Corps. Because finally, the Green Lantern Corps are like, why are we ignoring these guys through the history of all DC publishing? And they just go straight full war and skip the New Gods. And they're like, screw it. No, Green Lantern versus Darkseid. Apocalypse. Yep. Yeah. Really good stuff.
Cool. All right. Thank you, Chris. And thank all of you for being here with me tonight. And thank all of you at home for listening. And tune in next week.